Ye shall know them by their vehicles. Those blue trucks that are always cutting you off on your way to the airport, sides emblazoned with grimy white crowns, dinged bumpers stickered, "Got a problem with my driving? Call 1-800-212-KING. Ye shall know them by their ads, on basic cable and drive time radio. Those billboards that are always blocking the signs and making you miss the airport turn, with their offers of free estimates over the phone and 100% money-back guarantees. Or maybe, like more than 180,000 other satisfied customers served in all five of the boroughs and three neighboring states since 1948, you know them as the courtly couriers, or the royal treatment pros, or the removalists with the regal touch, whom you've led into your home to move your most precious possessions to your new home, or else to one of their six 24-hour security-monitored, climate-controlled storage facilities conveniently located throughout the New York metropolitan area. Or maybe whatever you know is wrong because you've just been reading their online reviews. King's Moving. David King, president, spokesman, container of crises, stresses, and the distrained, was a licensed, bonded, limited liability, insured, large small business that specialized in, one guess, moving, and storage, and parking, and towing, and salvage, and scrap. Activities that demanded the blood sweat of plus minus 40 full-time and 60 part-time employees, 50 vehicles, 3 lots, 5 garages, 6 24-hour security-monitored climate-controlled storage facilities conveniently located throughout the New York metropolitan area, not to mention a headquarters in Jersey City, hard by the piers. Above all, King's Moving was a family business. Family-owned, family-operated. Family, family, family. Take that into account, Your Honor. It was summer. Toward the weekend of a holiday week, moving day, last day of the month, first day of the month, followed by Independence Day. And David King was out in the Hamptons at a birthday party for America, to which he'd been invited as a member of the Empire Club, which had required attendees to donate upwards of $4,000 for the privilege of drinking diluted booze and eating oversauced BBQ under the auspices of the New York State Republican Committee. Inviting him to a party and then making him pay. That was class. That was how billionaires stayed billionaires. And David, who'd resented even the toll to the Long Island Expressway, couldn't help but wonder whether he'd met $4,000 worth of people yet. He couldn't help valuating everything. The people, the property, the Victorianized manse shadowing the pool. His phone was vibrating again in his pocket. He canceled the call. He was working. He was working by attending a party at which he didn't know anyone, or knew only that he recognized names, faces, profiles. It was work having to restrain himself from mentioning mergers he'd only read about, acquisitions that weren't his, a celebrity stranger's divorce custody negotiation still ongoing. Having to endure discussions of clean ocean and beach replenishment initiatives when all he wanted to know was, daughter or wife? When all he wanted to know was, does anyone know where our host is? It was work pretending he blended, he mixed, pretending he wasn't sweating and had a second residence of his own and was a Hamptons vet and agreeing, yes, hasn't the Meadow Lane heliport gotten so crowded lately? And yes, isn't Ray from Elite Landscapers just the best? Because the fact remained that David had never been this far out on the island before, and not only couldn't he tell you which of the Hamptons he was in, he couldn't even tell you the number of Hamptons, or the differences between the Hamptons, or what made a Hampton singular, to begin with.
"Hope we're not keeping you,"
a lady said. David said, "Come again."
"You keep checking your phone."
"I've got foreign business, never stops. It's already July 5th somewhere." And he excused himself from that besant of lawn and its assembly of skinny flagpole women flying dresses in red, white, and blue. Ruth, his office manager, had been calling without leaving messages. Now she was gibberish texting.
Sorry, Bill sick, half take Bill Jr. B-ball practice. And then, anyway, not finding pass guard. David made his way among tents, buffet tables of chafing and carving and bars. The trick was to keep on the move. Kids. Put David around kids and he'd fantasize about having them, and only then would he recall that he had a daughter who was an adult now. The kids were having their faces smeared native with war paint. They bounced around on a giant inflatable galleon, parried and thrust with balloon swords. A breeze blew in with the dung of elephant rides. He moved among servers who made $8.75 an hour, and so who made about 14 cents, 14.5833 cents. He did the figures in his head, for each minute it took them to carve him prime rib, or fix him a scotch, or direct him and his menthols to a smoking area. Conversations collected as they were conducted in circles. About stocks, about real estate, stocks. About renovations and how draining it was to open a house for the season. Apparently to have two houses always meant neglecting one of them, at least. About alarm systems, sprinkler systems, sump pumps, white versus black mold. About politics. David's politics were aspirational, inferior. He was in favor of contacts, contracts, the right to not diet, and the right to jump lines at dessert stations.